Hi, this is James Olson.
And Jaden Fraze with Pacific Sound Radio.
Welcome to episode 2. If you haven't listened to episode 1, you can check it out on our website at pacificsoundradio.com and on our YouTube channel. Wind Up Birds were our first ever guests. We had a lot of fun hearing them play some songs from their debut record and chatting with them about their DIY approach to art and music. On this episode, we had the chance to speak with Douse. Douse are an art rock band from New Westminster that's been generating a fair bit of buzz since the release of their debut album, The Light in You Is Left, in late 2016. Their debut appeared on a number of best of 2016 lists, including in Beatroot Magazine and Inside Vancouver, and charted nationally on CBC and College Radio.
Douse's sound is a marriage of contrary elements, emotional yet restrained vocal melodies intertwined with intricate guitar and dynamic drum work to create a listening experience that is moody and evocative.
Welcome to episode 2.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Columbia.
You're listening to Pacific Sound Radio.
My name is Aaliyah. I play guitar and sing. I'm the front person.
Hi. My name is Jeremiah, and I play the drum set.
Hello, my name is Patrick, and I am the multi-instrumentalist of the band. I play lead guitar for live performance and a lot of other things that I will not get into for studio recordings.
That's such a lead guitar attitude.
I'm like the most important member of the band.
Yeah, that means I'm doing my job.
Yes, door effect right there, right?
We'll add it in some sound effects later. So what I wanted to start with was, you guys, pretty unique sounding band. Can't say I know any other band that sounds like you guys in the city. How would you describe Douse, your sound, sonic identity, all that fun stuff?
Oh, thank you.
Alternative rock.
No, we actually... we don't actually call it that, though. We had a hard time actually deciding what genre, especially because the album has a lot of, like, older, folkier stuff that was kind of, like, kind of morphed into, like, what we sound like now. But we're calling it art rock as an umbrella term.
To give you an idea of what Douse is all about, we're going to play you the first track off of their record. This song is called The Importance of Each Other, and we feel that it really sets the tone for the rest of the album.
We're not capable of it. said you would not.
I've looked at plenty of Wikipedia pages of albums that I feel like are influences on us as a band, and a lot of them say art rock. So I was like, "Yeah,
pretty much sums it up right there."
Yeah.
What are some of those albums?
I think I was looking at Heroes by David Bowie. I was looking at Reflector by Arcade Fire. I was looking at Be Discipline and Three of a Perfect Pair by King Crimson. I don't know, just. Like, Woman's self-titled, maybe, like, Preoccupations, their previous self-titled album. Stuff like that. Stuff along the lines of those albums, along with, like, whatever Cure albums, probably. I don't know.
The King Crimson one's a little unexpected.
Really? Okay.
I don't know, maybe I'm just familiar with the 80s
stuff of theirs.
I'm more familiar with the 70s stuff, like, you know, 21st Century Schizoid Man, Starless and Bible Black. Those are the main two.
All great albums. Yeah, Red as well. Like all
Red. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
All of them are great albums, but yeah, I think that was definitely quite a different sound to what they were doing in the 80s, to what they were doing in the 90s, to what they're doing now, even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Robert Fripp is such a monster of a guitarist. He's pumping out stuff.
He's just a monster of a human being. You've seen how many members have been through that band. he seems like a decent fellow.
So how did you guys all meet and wind up playing together?
Well, Patrick and I were part of this arts council in Delta. We were organizing a lot of shows with local bands, and everyone kind of came from their different backgrounds. In the end, we put on a show with a band called Winter Coast, which is now defunct, that Leah was playing violin in. Patrick and I were playing in my solo project at the time. And then, who was the other band that played?
We played with
this Winter was playing, which is some of our now current friends too. That was Laura and Rachel and Russ. Russ's band.
Yeah, I feel like there was
another one. No, we also that played with right. We also played with the Green Room, who now go by Shotgun.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay, I always forget. I don't remember that show at all. I just remember aspects that were important to me.
not to discredit what Green Room, now known as Shotgun, are doing. I think that was also like the duo also opened that show.
Suddenly there.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, with
Galen
and
the other dude.
And David.
Okay, so there was,
Jared and myself were in his project, Jared and the Imaginaries. Aliyah was playing violin for Winter Coast. And I think at that show afterwards, Aliyah, you had messaged Shares like, hey, I'm looking for session musicians.
Right? Well, actually, I messaged you. You always say that, but actually, I messaged you first. And I was like, oh, how do I, like, because I wanted to book more shows for my solo stuff. And I was like, how do I get into shows here? Because we had such a good show there. Yeah. And, like, it was so fun with you guys.
Well, I think that was relevant.
And then, it was very relevant for me. And then I had needed more positive experiences as a musician at that time. So I messaged you first. And then you were like, oh, Jared's willing to talk to you. And then I talked to him about booking a show. But then we started talking about how I wanted session musicians.
And then Jared messaged me.
Yeah.
I was like, Patrick plays guitar and bass, and he's a great musician, and he was in a lot of bands in high school. And
fun fact, I was actually playing bass first when we were session musicians for the band. I was playing bass, and then, Aliyah, you saw me at another show at the Fire Hall playing a different project, and you're like, I want him on guitar, and I was like, fine.
that's right.
That's why he still writes the bass parts.
Yeah.
That's when I had power too. I could be like, you're switching instruments.
Well, aren't you rocking a baritone guitar now though? Kind of filling out both sides a little bit?
It wasn't a baritone. What I used to do when we kind of played played live as a three piece was I had a Digitech whammy pedal I guess you can sort of reference bands like Royal Blood. You can reference bands like that, or like White Stripes, you know, who kind of do the sort of using guitar as a kind of octave bass type So, I think it was pretty much I was doing that. I used a regular guitar, but doing Digitech whammy stuff. And then now we have a wonderful live session bass player named Victoria Spooner, who is wonderful on bass.
Yeah, sweet.
This is a really long-winded answer to a very easy question.
That was all three of us.
We love
the conversational aspect, though. That's what we love.
Okay, good.
So yeah, not just the no.
Yeah, easy answers.
Okay, next question.
I knew that.
How did you all meet? No.
And then you guys started playing together under
we played for about a year, a little less than a year, and then we kind of felt like it was
6 months or something.
Was it 6 months?
Well, it was the October of that year, I think.
I thought it was
same year.
It was the October.
April to November we were playing.
No, it was you're just a shift like a month back. So it was March to October, I think.
I think November 13th we announced it. That's why I'm thinking about that.
Maybe. I don't know. But yeah, it wasn't long. And then we were like, oh, we function well as a collaborative. And then it took us 2 more years to figure out how to write together.
So
was that the main reason why you decided to instigate the name change? It felt more like a band than just a solo project with other people?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like a trial run of like, okay, we'll still function. We'll function as a three-piece under the name still, but people were just mistaking it so frequently as like a singer-songwriter project that, and it kind of actually, we noticed, you know, like, I mean, it's really frustrating because then nobody feels like equal in the band, right? So it's like their efforts aren't being credited as much as they should be. So yeah, we just figured like it was time to switch the name.
It was also like we were getting put in slots at like shows or festivals where they would expect like a solo singer-songwriter and they, you know, be put in those slots. But then, you know, we showed up as a band and it was like, oh, it's actually like a band playing like at 4 p.m. at this festival.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That was something I don't even think about.
So yeah. How much of Douse's current sound, was any of that a carryover from name you were going under before or any of that music?
Oh yeah, like Importance of Each Other was something that I think was from the Aaliyah Ray era, and then Hypertension is the oldest song that was like that was probably 4 or 5 years old by the time it was on the album, so that was something I wrote by myself. And then but I think a lot of it we actually wrote together, or like Patrick had started with like riffs or something, which was new for us because originally I would like bring a full song or almost fully done song and they would write around it. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of yeah, Patrick brought a lot of stuff once it kind of opened up the space for him to do that. So, and then Jared started bringing stuff, so it changed a lot.
However, yeah. I don't want to discredit the work that you've done, though, with, like, you know, song ideas that were brought to the album. The song Worsening was written while we were still under the Aaliyah Ray name, and Aaliyah brought the initial, the initial verse riff to us, and It was definitely a fun challenge, you know, the complex time signature changes with that. That was really fun.
Yeah. Oh, that was probably our first, like, art rock song. Probably, that, we were, like, trying to figure out how to count it, and we're like, oh, this part's 7-4, and then there's two bars of 4-4, four, four, and then it goes back to 7-4, and then Jer was really upset.
Yeah, well, that was a do. And then we started writing more and more like that, because it just became apparent that's what everyone was, like, naturally going to, even without counting it, and then that was kind of how, I feel like that's how our sound developed more and more, is like writing without the thought of a time signature, but just writing and then...
And being like, oh, this is in 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it's like, one person's going to play in 4, though, so let's just do that now.
Interesting sign, though. I found some of the old demos today of, like how the songs used to be, like songs that were on the album. I found, like, demos from like 2 years ago, and they have like completely different structures. So yeah, it's really interesting how like with it's kind of a thing where it's like with first albums, like there's so much time to write songs, so it's like songs take so much change, you know, between like the starting of a band and doing this the first album. You know, it's interesting.
Absolutely, yeah. Just going through kind of the process of, you know, further refining it more and more.
Yeah.
Until it's, you know, something that really meets your vision or something that's, you know, kind of surprising you out of like the blue, you know, where, you know, you didn't know that a song was maybe going to necessarily go into that direction and then it just turns out to be kind of a surprise. Definitely. Have you guys ever found that with any of the songs that you guys have put together, or is it always just kind of a clear vision as you guys were developing the whole art rock thing?
I feel like, sorry, you want to go?
I was going to say, I think it often happens where we don't know where anything's going to go. Like, at times, each of us have some sort of vision. Like, Patrick envisions a lot of songs in holes, and
I envision songs as being in the soundtrack of movie Holes.
I was going to say,
the song, great movie, yeah, starring Shia LaBeouf.
Dig it up,
and scene.
Yeah.
So. but like he envisions a lot of the songs as a full band, and he can kind of write parts to it. So when they come to us, we kind of, I don't know. I feel like we found our sound through not knowing where songs were going to go. That's where I think we started developing what we were supposed to be doing.
Well, yeah, often it would be like, especially like for instance, Patrick, when we first started writing Speak to Carius, Patrick basically brought that riff that starts the song. And he was like, what do you guys think of this cool thing? And then we were just like, I don't know, what are we going to do with that? Like, we just kind of, like, had no idea. And then it just turned into, like, it just got weirder and weirder the more we started all contributing to it. So that's just kind of how I think we right now.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, yeah. We'll have some sort of, each person maybe will come up with an idea, and they'll bring it. And then once we have enough ideas, I guess, we start to talk about structure. And then,
Yeah, once we can like solidly play a section together, we're like, okay, now what's the next section going to look like, and how long is that each section?
Whatever. And what's missing that needs to be taken out of this section?
Yeah.
It is interesting how confusion leads to creation.
Yeah, that's a huge thing that we kind of, yeah, there's no plan necessarily all the time.
Well, right. Mostly.
I mean, yeah, we have to divert from the plans of time.
Yeah. It's good to divert from plans, I feel like, you know. It's like, because sometimes you'll get a more interesting adventure that way than if you, like, know exactly what's going to happen. There's got to be swerves, you know?
Totally. Kind of on that, were there any songs that changed, like, extremely radically when they were first written and how they wound up on the record?
Hypertension.
You think so?
The structure. Remember it changed?
Oh, the structure was very drastic. Actually, it's funny. We were talking about Winston Ostfeld earlier because actually, I was thinking about working with him when I was still solo, and then I went in and I was showing him like some of my material, and he was like, "What is this? Like, why do you have like 8 parts in this song? What's even going on?" And that was actually Hypertension that I showed him, and he was like trying to like, he was just like really confrontational about it, but he was also like, you know, it was such a good point of like, well, why is this song doing so many different things at once, and why does it have to keep jumping around like this? And so I actually kind of like took that back, and then we reworked the song and really simplified it, and it actually made a huge, huge difference. So thanks, Winston.
I feel like Hypertension, Worsening, and The Importance of Each Other were definitely like 3 songs that like really like they changed from, you know, like its inception to like what's currently on the album.
Yeah, when we first started playing Worsening, especially because that was like our first kind of like non-standard time signature song, it was such a mess, and like we were playing it live, and people's reactions were so mixed for so long that we were kind of still figuring out as we were playing it too. So that song, I think, got worked probably the most. I think out of everything on the album, because we were like, "Does this make sense? Does this make sense? Is this long?"
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah,
I think that Worsening, and then like, I very much feel like all of the drum parts went through their own thing. Like,
yeah,
that was a big thing for me. Kind of writing to this stuff was like, what do I want my parts to be? What do I want to play forever, basically? Because I feel very confident with the project. I'm like, what do I want to play for the length of this project? You know, like, I don't want to get tired of songs, and I want to make something interesting, compelling. I don't want to just write a part just for the sake of a part. I want to write it because it's important.
Yeah, because so it's interesting to play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, for 25 shows.
Yeah, for 25. Who needs backbeats?
Yeah, exactly.
Within any of your songs, is there room for you to improvise in terms of fills and stuff like that, or is it fairly structured?
They're pretty structured. They're pretty structured songs. I'd say that there's like a few moments in some songs that lend space. Not so much for them, but for, I don't know about you, your voice.
Well, vocally, I play around sometimes now, but yeah, our songs are pretty rigid.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that there are little things here and there definitely that, like, you know, we can sort of, like, play around with, you know, but I think the songs are sort of, like, written in a way where, like, a lot of them, like, they can't, like, if there is a part that's changed, you know, it'll kind of change almost the whole song, you know, like, by changing, like, a little thing.
There's a lot of nuances, yeah. You can't kind of just, like, start noodling or else it'll be like, wow, this is not even the same song now.
Yeah,
the drum part can change a lot.
The drum part can change.
Luckily. Yeah.
So, yeah, kind of speaking on that, I mean, you guys had, you know, some pretty cool freedoms in the studio and stuff to mess around with all these sounds. Have you found any kind of big challenges jumping to a live setting with a lot of that?
Actually, well, no, because we were playing them all before the studio, like, long before we went in. We did kind of have, like, Colin Stewart invited us over to just do some demos in January, so it was a few months before we actually were recording the album. And that kind of, I guess, laid out the groundwork of, like, this is what really needs help and needs work, like, within each song. So we had that time to kind of iron out things, but we didn't really otherwise have too many problems with that. Just because we didn't really add a lot. We actually ended up stripping out a lot of extra stuff we were going to have in the songs.
Right.
So.
Cool. Yeah, there's going to be, like, there was originally, like, a lot more orchestration and some synthesizers as well that, like, were going to be on the songs, but kind of just felt it more appropriate for the emotion of the songs to strip it back a little at points, you know. Sometimes you can go overboard. Well, sometimes I can go overboard.
Well, yeah, we were like discovering that the space we were filling up with all of the instruments was getting, it felt clogged.
Yeah, a little bit cluttered and stuff, yeah.
So, you know, you're covering all of the sonic basses, and then it's like you have no room to breathe when you're listening to it. So, you know, it was a compromise for us, but also like it's very appropriate that we compromise that.
Yeah, well, it just made sense too. Like, I think a lot of bands assume like, oh, when you're going to the studio, you should be adding instruments you wouldn't normally be playing with because you can. Yeah. Right. And I think it was kind of like, you know, once we listen to everything back, we're like, oh, it makes sense not to have that stuff in for us. Like, we don't necessarily need it. So,
yeah, I think like really the only song, if you can call it that, that changed drastically before going into recording the album was Second Burst, which is barely even it's kind of an interlude because like it was originally just the guitar and that, and we added like a lot of extra weird sounds with it.
That was like written like in the studio though, pretty much.
Most of it. Yeah.
Most of it.
And the careless drum part was written on the spot too. Those two things.
Yeah.
My favorite percussion on the album definitely is the pants.
Yeah, that's one thing I'll never be able to replicate live is I played my pants.
Just like rubbing pants.
I think I saw that in one of the vlogs actually with you guys recording, and I thought it was a pillow, but
there was a pillow on the hi hat. But
there's also pants.
But I think on Instagram it might be there. But there's like a rubbing pants as a sort of.
He just stood on a stool and was like going like this.
Yeah,
rubbing his leg.
Yeah, my legs.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a shaker in a way. Actually.
The whole song.
Yeah.
It's more rubber than a shaker.
Is that in Second Burst or what?
That's in Careless.
That's in Careless. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. I was like, this is something. It was one of the few auxiliary, I guess you could say, parts that I was like, this is a necessary thing. This, and then like, because the song was quite. It left a lot of room to improvise, so that was like the only thing pretty much on the record that is on the percussion.
Never thought I'd say that pants were necessary, but yeah, I guess they are.
They sound good to me.
Is it credited on the album?
George Pants?
No.
Jeremiah, drums, pants. Percussion.
Yeah, I don't think we did. That's not the reissue.
An anniversary reissue with like demos and songs that were left off the album.
The pants bed track.
Yeah, pants stem.
Hey, Colin, do you still have the stems for this album 10 years ago?
You should.
So what was the process like recording the album? Because you were with Colin at the Hive for 2 weeks, and were you guys essentially living there for the whole time?
Yeah, he has like a nice little living space that you can stay in, and like it's right it's in North Saanich. That's what it's called. Yeah, and it's like this really beautiful quiet neighborhood area. It's super nice there. So yeah, it was like a really nice like space too, because you could go outside and it was just like quiet and nature, and then you went inside, you could just be working on what you want to be working on, right, for 2 weeks straight. So it was really nice to be in that headspace like for a period of time instead of kind of like working on it every weekend or something, right? So
It was also really nice to be around that many lava lamps. There was so many lava lamps.
Just all the vibes.
Yeah. All, I don't know if he had a vibraphone, but he had vibes.
I think he did have a vibraphone.
Did he? Oh, there, even more vibes. For the most part, it was definitely a good experience. Yeah, for the most part.
It was definitely a very unique experience where we had never gone into a studio together like that.
For that length of time, yeah.
Yeah, because we basically, with her original EP, she was doing a lot of the work, and then she had some other auxiliary players, and then we did a couple sessions, just quick, and then our next releases lent us, like, I think it was 2 weekends,
to do two songs,
and that was kind of like us learning how to be in a studio together, a studio space, writing together, and all that stuff.
But it wasn't even a studio space, it was like a basement.
Yeah.
So, and it was like 2 days, like, you know, like 4 days total, but spread out. So it wasn't even really like an accurate representation of what it would be like.
Yeah.
But it was something that we had never done before.
Yeah.
And then this was like, okay, we're going to go live together for 2 weeks, which we had done before, but live together in like a space for 2 weeks, somewhere we don't know, with someone we don't really know. And then, you know, write and record a whole record, which we all had never really done before in this professional space. So it was a huge learning curve, but Colin really helped us discover how we need to work together to write and work together in a studio. He left a lot of space to be comfortable in that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It's a lot to say about the process. I don't know.
Yeah, what was kind of like the biggest
biggest challenge with that, do you think? It was like, is there kind of something that sticks out that was kind of like the biggest kind of learning thing out of that whole experience? Or,
oh, I would just say creative differences and like everybody having their own vision of a song, right? And like Patrick is could very easily write everyone's parts. He has the capability, whereas Jared and I write a bit slower and we focus on obviously what we're best at. And so kind of like having to deal with that dynamic and figure out how to work through that. And then Jer having a lot of auxiliary percussion ideas we didn't know about and like things like that. So then we're like, okay, well, we had never even thought of these things that he's not bringing to the table. And so there was a lot of like different things that people like, yeah, had been thinking about doing or like could do or whatever. And so we kind of had to like work through that and be like, okay, what is actually most important about being on this record? And we had to figure out how to compromise. So yeah, that was probably the biggest thing, was just being like, okay, everyone has different expectations, but like, how can we make this like an equal experience for everybody?
I think it was also sort of even just the approach of the songs. Like, are we making dark music with pop tendencies, or are we making pop music with dark tendencies? That was a sort of, I think that was a sort of like subliminal like challenge like throughout the whole thing. I think like with
I never even thought about that. I know we talked about that with Colin, but that was not really something I was concerned about as much.
I thought it was a good conversation.
I think there were a lot of things too. Like I don't know if I could ever put my finger on one. There was like bare bones. We had a couple session musicians come in. We had a violinist. We had another violinist, which unfortunately didn't work out. We had a cellist and we had a trombone player, and like most of the parts were written. Patrick had written most of the parts and he had written sheet music for it, but there were a lot of sections where we wanted to just kind of have noise or like noodling, and it was a way, like it was a challenge for us to at times communicate that to someone, especially because they're from a different background and they don't really know what we're creating. Some of them were really fluent. I think the cellist was exceptional. You know, she just kind of went at it.
Yeah, she was super, super chill about that.
Yeah. But then we sometimes had trouble just like, this is the kind of noise we want. It wasn't like, we didn't want like squeaks. We wanted like Colin Stetson or like Radiohead sort of like background wash noise.
Like chaotic, but like still coherent notes.
Yeah, and then we had to piece that all together later. You know, that's in the process in itself. But
I mean, the Fachamaras, they did like a pretty good job. They weren't like completely able to, I think, understand exactly because, you know, sort of different backgrounds. I know them personally. Sort of like coming from different backgrounds, you know.
This next song is also the second song on the record. Unrest takes you even deeper into Douse's introspective sonic world. Patrick's inventive guitar work really shines through on this one.
Better yet, left alone.
So what's the reaction been like to your debut album?
Good.
Terrible. No, I mean, it's been... I mean, obviously, you know, we can be as proud as we want with the album, but it's always surprising when we hear other people like it. So I think just the sheer fact that it's gotten such, like, such praise from, like, a lot of our peers and even, like, you know, sort of press from, like, all international press, really. You know, we've gotten press from the UK on the album, and the amount of praise is definitely, like, it is very humbling.
Well, I think what was the most rewarding part was that we finally had, like, a physical product of what we were doing live, and obviously if you weren't seeing us live, you didn't know what we sounded like now, so we just had, like, all our old stuff out, which was very, very folky. And so this was, like, super, like, it was nice to be able to, like, prove, like, okay, well, here's actually what we sound like now. And, like, a lot of people were really blown away by that, too. Especially, you know, if you're not seeing live shows all the time, you would never know that we had, like, changed so drastically. So that was probably the most, like, rewarding part of that. And, yeah, people took a lot of interest after that, which was super nice. So.
Well, we had basically gone through, right around that time, a name change, which we found in the studio. We found the name of the studio. So we were like, all this stuff kind of came together. We found a name change, a branding change with the record. Like, the artwork was totally different from what we would ever have done before. And then obviously the sonic change, the visual change. We all look different. Well, I look the same pretty much. But we all have gone through, like, a lot of physical change. I feel like before we went into the studio, we were kind of like, looked at as, yeah, like before,
like
we said,
more of a folk band.
More of a folk band.
Like a basic indie rock band, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was like we kind of didn't see, before we recorded, like, we didn't even know what we sounded like still. It was kind of like Colin convinced us that we could do this at that point.
That's true. We felt like it was very disjointed, all the material we had, and we were just like, well, let's put it on an album because it's all we have. But then, yeah, Colin was like, no, you guys are a rock band now. And so that was really
a funny thing that I've encountered recently is that because of how we've developed as a live band, we've actually started, like, now, like, the album is once again sort of different from what we're doing live. I think that we've gone, like, definitely, like, a lot, like, louder and more emotional and heavier, like, live performances than what was kind of portrayed on the album. So I thought that was, like, yeah, you know, like, I've had, you know, people, like, tell me that is, like, yeah, you know, like, you're, like, so different live than in the album. I'm like, again?
It is interesting, especially with the same material. I guess it comes out of the small fills and the small tonal changes and improvisation that you kind of just hit things harder, and the sound on the record is never going to be the same.
It's never going to be the same, but I also think, like, well, so you're playing backing tracks, but I mean, but I think it's also because we're, like, comfortable in the material now, right? Because before we were still, like, developing it, and then we just kind of had to commit once we recorded the album. But now we're like, okay, this makes sense, right?
We have to make, like, a live concert movie now. Like,
I don't think that'd, like, be rad, actually.
Accurately portray, like, what, like, no, this is what we're like.
We could wait until later to do that.
Live concert movie coming out within the next decade.
Yeah, that's right.
The reaction has definitely been overwhelming.
Yeah, it's been very nice, yeah. Especially, like, we just did a little Western Canadian tour, and like, the reception to, like, especially people that don't know us, or we'd go into a show and it seemed like, oh no, like, oh, we don't know how the show's going to go. And then people were, like, stoked after. And, like, at least one person in a show was stoked, which was very exciting, you know? Because there's lots of shows you can play, like, on tour, and, like, no one cares, right? And so it's really tough.
No one shows up.
Or no one shows up. But even, like, yeah, even if we had a small audience, at least someone was excited. So,
like, someone,
really,
like, even,
nice,
like, coming from out of town, like, to come see us, like, in, it was in Courtney.
Oh, yeah. Some people, like, had heard word of mouth about us, and they drove like an hour from, like, an hour away to come see us at this, like, little cafe. It was so crazy. Yeah. Like, this, like, sweetest people. And they bought so much merch.
And then they brought someone out to Cats, didn't they?
No, they told their friend that lives in Vancouver about us. And then that person came out to our stylist show with their daughter.
Yeah.
And we were like, what?
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. So
when was this tour, and where'd you guys wind up going?
Oh, that was late April, early May.
Yeah, we did like a couple legs with it. We did like a short, like, Vancouver Island. So we just did like Victoria, two shows in Nanaimo, and then Courtney. And then we went back out east to do Vernon, Banff, Lethbridge, Calgary, and Edmonton. And yeah, I think that was definitely like one of the most fun trips we've done. It was, you know, like, such good reception, like, mostly every show. Yeah.
And it was our first tour, really, that we...
It's our first little tour since the album.
Since the album, since we've kind of felt together, like, as that sound, mm-hmm. which was really interesting, because before we had gone out, and still had a decent reception, but it wasn't like we were playing nearly the same music, so it was kind of, we were going out now with all of our emotions intact live, our performance and our music, like, much more solidified, the sound, we were all more way more together now. So it was really, really engaging to see the reaction from that, as opposed to, like, you know, we have a fantastic fan base here in Vancouver, but seeing it everywhere else and seeing people are actually listening in Calgary and Edmonton and want to come out is really, really...
Yeah, wonderful. Calgary was really good.
Calgary is always
good. Some people even, like, sang along. That was a, like, a really good feeling. Like, you know, a person in Edmonton saw, here in Vancouver at a Petzolano, you know, saw someone sing along. It's just, like, that's always, I think, one of the best feelings for a band or artist, like, to see someone interacting to that level with the music, you know. I think that's, you know, definitely one of the best feelings.
Definitely. Was there a, like, single show that you each thought was, like, yeah, that was easily the best one?
On the tour?
On the tour, yeah.
Calgary.
Oh, I think we fully agree on Calgary.
I don't feel Calgary.
We had a soap chant at Calgary.
Oh, we did a soap chant at Calgary.
So part of our merch is soap that Aaliyah makes. It's a vegan handmade soap. And so the other bands the other bands they saw that we were selling it, and they were, like, really stoked on that fact that we were selling soap. So, like, what was it, first band?
Fox who slept the day away.
Yeah.
Every, like, between their songs, they would say, like, buy soap, or they would say soap in their songs and stuff, and then they started, and then at the end of the set, someone started chanting soap, and everyone in the venue were chanting soap. Huh?
Colton did that as well.
Yeah, they were all very...
Oh, yeah, cool. Colton mentioned it, but in a much more, like, normal, very, like, encouraging way, as opposed to just being, like, buy soap in the middle of, like...
Yeah.
Lethbridge was also good.
Lethbridge was surprising. I mean, like, you know, there was, like, a lot of, like, wishy-washiness going into that show, like, with, you know, like, venues and just, like, you know, like, what it was going to be like. And then we played with, like, an awesome...
We played with Connor HD, and we played with Blaze Gringo and the band. And it was, like, really strange because we didn't have a venue because the venue had closed down before we got there. So we played a smokehouse, and we were the first ones to arrive in Lethbridge, the very industrial section, at a smokehouse where no one was, and I think it was a Sunday.
It was a Thursday.
Yeah. And we were like, we've never been here. no one here looks like they're going to have a good time. And I don't know if anyone's going to come. Because, like, we go a lot by, like, events on Facebook. We're like, okay, well, there's no interaction or anything. And I don't know anyone there. But we had a We had a good crowd.
We sold a lot of merch.
The people there were, like, it was, like, maybe we had, I don't know, we had, like, 20 people watching us.
Yeah, well, the people who were there were very excited.
And they were all super engaged. And that was really interesting because you go so many places, and obviously that doesn't happen all the time. But we went there, and people were just, like, every single person was super jazzed. It sounded like a 40-person crowd instead of 20 because they were so into it, which is just so overwhelming. And I felt even better about how we played there than some of the cities. Like, we were just so relaxed.
Plus, Blaze Gringo and the Mad is like a jazz space funk kind of band. I want to put more of those kind of bands, right. Definitely. It's just, like, they're so fun to watch and, like, play shows with, like, bands of, like, you know, such a different but interesting style, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
For sure. I actually had a question planned about the soap. So where did the soap come from? Is that just a hobby?
Yeah. So I got, like, really excited about making soap a year and a half ago. So I took a class, and then I was like, I can do this at home. And then I just kind of now, like, I don't have a dining room anymore because it's where all my soap stuff is. And I have, like, this whole, like, shelf that actually Jer found on the side of the road, and then I assembled, but it goes, like, from the floor to the ceiling in my place, and it's just full of soap. And so, I was like, well, what can I, it's taking up so much space in my house. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll start selling it at shows. And then I was just selling like the ones I was making, and they were just kind of like, whatever. But then I was like, well, what if maybe each band member had their own scent? And so I asked the guys.
We totally noticed that at the Catalano show. Like, oh, this is amazing. You guys have like personalized merch, which is super cool.
So what are your scents?
Well, they actually just changed, but I had lavender eucalyptus, and now it's oatmeal, milk, and honey. And then Jer's was cotton candy, and then Patrick wanted creamsicle, and I was like, we can't all have sweet-smelling things, so...
I want a campfire.
You want a campfire, but that one is hard to find.
So what is it that Jer and I have instead?
All right, now Jer has green tea and cucumber, and Patrick is sandalwood and sage.
And
charcoal.
There we go.
With charcoal. Nice.
And Victoria has.
And Victoria is like berries and like flowery kind of.
Berries and roses, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
This is cool. The charcoal one is like, it's all black. So it's like the gothiest soap you'll ever see.
Yeah, Patrick asked me to get an emo soap. And so that's why his is all black.
Well, it used to be emo because there's a little kind of like white stripe going through it. Kind of like a My Chemical Romance album or whatever. And now it's just all black. There's like all darkness. No light. It's just, it's
dark as space.
I want literally like science to say discover like that new, what was it? It's like blacker than black. That's kind of like
the. I think I actually saw something on that. Yeah.
It was like a new black that they found. I think they made like a paint of it. So I want I want to get that paint so I can just paint everything I can find just the blackest black possible.
If we're gonna talk about the soap again, because I want to talk about me.
Gotta figure out how to make that soap even darker.
It's got so much charcoal in it. Like, I have to, like, I have, like, normally you would dilute it in oil and mix in, like, any colorants. But I actually literally have to just, like, take, like, a bowl of charcoal and, like, dump it into, like, the batter. So, and, like, really, like, mash it in. It's such a, like, process now. But,
it's the best soap.
It sells the best right now, but we'll see how these new ones do.
Have you, tried making soap that's like different shapes, like different little items and stuff like that? I asked because Jane and I were actually at Flaming Lips, and their premium merch item was a skull-shaped soap dish with an embryo soap baby.
Yeah,
in the skull-shaped soap dish.
Oh my god!
And it was like $50. So I'm like,
50.
Okay, yeah.
Holy cow! Lord.
We'll do that for 20.
Yeah. Holy cow! Those kind of things are a little bit harder because you would need like specific molds to make them, and like to make it like so many in bulk, right? I'd have to buy so many molds, and it would be quite more of a process. Whereas like this is just, I'm making like basically a block that I cut up later. So I am actually interested in experimenting with shape and stuff, but right now I'm just like, there's only so much that, like, we're selling it so fast too that, you know, because everyone's like, oh, right, cool novelty item, but it's also practical so I can use it, right? So it's a little tough to keep up with right now.
What's that one that's a little like almost like a hockey puck?
That's literally, I made that in a Pringles can. So it's like a cylindrical shape. But
What is the soap, like the best selling item of your merch?
It kind of is now. I mean, the thing about it too, which I didn't think about until we were on tour, is that like, if people are interested in buying physical copies of like music because they just want to listen on Spotify, they can still buy like this soap, which is like a practical, useful item, right? And they're still supporting us. So, and some people actually were doing that, and some people said to me like, "Oh, you know, I'm gonna listen to you online, but I just want to buy some soap because I want to support you." So it actually ended up working out pretty well, right?
We have shirts too, though.
We have shirts too, but you know, some people don't wear band shirts, so.
Yeah.
It's like a good way to kind of.
Well, luckily our band shirts, they don't like, there's, it has like a smaller design on it, so you can wear it, and like, you don't have to feel like you're repping something as much, even though you're still be repping something. So it's actually a great purchase, I find. Yeah.
Well, it is subtle. with the name on the phone.
Yeah.
And they're nice colors too.
As is my selling it on the podcast.
So that kind of ties into a broader question I had is that something that Jeremiah mentioned was that part of the process with recording the album was kind of like figuring out the imagery and stuff like that associated with the band in terms of like your look. So how did that develop? Was that, again, kind of like just trial and error, or was it something that was really conscious, or?
Well, we spent a lot of time looking into that, actually. We're mostly interested in a lot of like Japanese like advertisements around the 80s. I think actually Jared was most interested in those at the time. So we were looking at a lot of that kind of artwork. And then I don't remember who found the photo, but we found this photo of this gallery. Yeah. Space. I think it was a gallery space, and it was like so, it was just so interesting. And so that was kind of what the artwork ended up being based off of. But it was like this really like soft, kind of pastel-y room. So it was just really intriguing to us. And then we kind of thought, well, this record wouldn't necessarily make sense with this artwork, but that's kind of why that's interesting to us. So, yeah. But a lot of, like, Japanese artwork is really, like, interesting. And the ads and stuff, and the way they have the, I don't know if you want to talk about more jerks, it was more your idea, but yeah, just the way, like, their layouts are and stuff with their typefaces and stuff is really interesting. So,
yeah, I was, I around that time of the, like, writing the record and everything, I was, because I focused a lot on our branding. I do the posters and stuff. I was all the time on my computer trying to find what are we going to put on the album art, because, I mean, basically, we've created the songs, and now we have to create an entire image for the record, which is so daunting. It's so daunting, and it's so nerve-wracking, but luckily, like, a few things that I was already interested in, we were all interested in. One of them being the 80s, which we were listening to a lot of music from the 80s at the time, and they especially love...
I don't know what happened. Jaden's hungry. It looks like I'm hungry, so I apologize about that.
That's so funny.
Just random stomach growl.
Who let Chewbacca into the room?
You're hungry for more information from Jared.
Exactly. So, exactly that.
Continue.
Yeah. Continue.
So yeah, we were all listening to a lot of 80s music at the time, and the sounds that were happening in those recordings, as well as they are really fascinated by Japanese culture. I'm really fascinated by Japanese artwork and a lot of the kind of westernized 80s commercial advertisements that were coming out at the time. There were a lot of like interesting artists that were going over there and like promoting like soda or whatever. And I found this just like a really compelling, soft image. Like, you had some like really light colors, but like some really bold shapes, bold colors as well. And so basically I was surfing through Tumblr and we were all doing really at the time, and everyone was kind of pitching ideas. And I think we were in the studio and I found that image and I showed it to everyone. And I said, like, we kind of agreed that that was interesting and compelling. And then through that, did we get the photo shoot done before that?
Oh, yeah, that was in, like, February or something. Yeah.
So we also had a photo shoot that surprisingly kind of commingled with that pretty well, without any planning, in this cabin-like house with really nice colors. And it kind of just came together. Like, Aaliyah was really fascinated, especially with the photographer's house that we took the shoot in. And... I think we all really appreciated that house. It was an A-frame house, nice wood. There are a lot of different angles in the room.
Shout out to Alyssa Crow.
Shout out to Alyssa Crow. She's...
Great photographer.
And, I don't know, there's a lot to say about the image and the branding, but those two pieces were a big part of kind of bringing everything together. And then when we got the design work done and we got the actual album artwork done, by a friend of ours, Sheldon.
Sheldon Sunny of White Creative.
Yeah, there we go.
Great guy. Great athlete.
He's a champion. He gave us a font, and that was Helvetica, which is obviously like a very, very normal, very attractive font.
Actually, I picked that.
Oh, did you pick that?
Yeah, I picked the font. Yeah.
Oh, well,
yeah,
there you go.
Helvetica, yeah.
Because it's supposed to be like the most attractive font.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, then it kind of like out of that, we were able to use that on all of our branding. So it was like the image came together out of a lot of happenstance, but a lot of work too. Like, it was a lot of background work to find.
We got a lot done in the studio. Now I'm like, wow, when we have full time, when bands full time work, then we actually get things done fast.
And
it's like an interesting thing. Like, I realized while we were kind of looking at the artwork and making the album, was that we were taking like a lot of the influence from the Japanese ads from the 80s that were kind of sort of like Americanized, but so like it, in a weird way where like it wasn't quite like American, but it wasn't quite Japanese. Like, there was like a sort of like weird thing in the middle. And I kind of felt like that was the sort of case for our music as well, where it kind of had influences from this thing, but then had some influences from like that thing, but it didn't really fit either one, you know. It's the same thing with like our position in like, you know, in the local music scene. Like, we didn't quite fit in this thing, didn't quite fit in that thing. So we were kind of like this weird thing in the middle, you know? So I felt like that
those sort of like that influence from the Japanese 80s ads were like very, it really did work with like where we were at that time when making the album. So I think it was a very necessary thing to do.
I think that's why we probably connect with all these things that happened in imagery. Like you obviously connect with a picture for a reason. You connect with music for a reason. And I think that's kind of how all this stuff, when I think about it, actually ends up making sense together, is because you kind of feel it out, and all the emotion that you're having in the studio is able to kind of, the energy is able to go into those things. So, I mean, I wish I had like a very simple answer for it all, but it is just a lot of like, a lot of, I don't intend to have simple answers.
Well, no, it just reminded me of us like fighting over whether or not the glasses were going to be on the cover.
There was originally, if you look on the, I think it's on the cassette, it's on the like inner sleeve thing in the record, and also on the CD.
It's on everything.
There's the broken glasses on it. Fun fact: those were supposed to be on the front cover.
Well, they were going to be like folded on the cover, but basically, yeah. Like Jared had like stepped on his glasses and broke them in the studio, and like I was trying to, like when we were doing that artwork, I was like, oh, there should be something in the foreground. Like I really felt strongly about that. And I was like, oh, maybe we can use, like, Jared's glasses because it's kind of, like, a symbolic thing in a way. But then when we had them on the cover, we were all like, I don't know. And so we, like, thought about it for weeks. But now they're not on the cover, so.
Yeah, apologies to, once again, Sean Stang from Wait Creators. apologies to him for, you know, so much back and forth.
It's a lot of discovery.
Great album. Actually, best album of all time. Yeah, Discovery by Daft Punk.
Well, yeah, obviously.
Yeah, of course. By far.
So, you guys have another tour coming up. Is this tour bigger than your previous one, or is it around the same size, or what's...
It's 25 dates.
Wow.
25 shows in 30 days.
Yeah.
Where are you guys going?
We're going to Montreal. And then come back.
We're just driving only to Montreal. We're going to come all the way back.
We're moving in a van.
Yeah. 30 days. Lunch
in
Quebec.
Yeah.
I mean, we're hitting all like the major cities. We're hitting Saskatoon, Calgary, Edmonton.
Winnipeg, the most major.
Winnipeg.
That's the Mecca of Canada.
Yeah. Actually, Winnipeg actually was one of our best shows last time we played there, I think. At least for me, anyway.
It's great.
So... No offense, Winnipeg, we're safe. But it's just like, you know, we're doing a full month cross Canada, Montreal and back. Biggest tour yet, gonna be the best tour yet. You can't miss it. It's gonna be like, come out to the show if we're coming near you. It's gonna be the best.
Going near you. Yeah. If we're driving anywhere near you.
If you just come out of your house.
Yes, come out.
Yeah. It's gonna be the best.
Are you guys touring with anyone? Like, do you have tour mates, or are you just connecting with local bands at dates that you're playing?
Just local bands. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
We really want to support the up-and-coming bands that are in each of the cities. You know, we want to kind of, like, and also, like, experience, like, what they're bringing to the table, you know, as much as we can. Like, you know, instead of having a sort of, like, set bill that just goes across and, you know, that's the bill for every show. Like, we want to, you know, get the locals out.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to connect because if you're touring with somebody, you have a much more limited scope of who you're going to see and the scenes you're going to touch and the people you're going to connect with. So playing with more locals, I mean, I guess it's obvious. It's like, you're just going to meet more people. People are going to come out more frequently and it's.
I don't know. It's just easier to organize with less people. That's probably the brunt of it.
That too, yeah. Yeah. When you have more than one band on the tour, it can be
a load off because you're splitting up dates with more people, but also like, yeah, you do limit yourself because then it's like, how many, you know, you do have to, you play like four band bills sets every night or what, you know, to like get local draw out or whatever. So
exactly.
When you are touring with a band, you know, I mean, like, you know, at points it can definitely be like a lot of fun, you know, like I've seen that happen with like, you know, friends of mine, but you know, other points it can be a bit, you know, like a bit hard for your mental health.
It's like,
oh my God. Okay. Well, that's a great pun. Patrick. Great pun. Got a wooden smile over there.
What are you talking about? So tears going to be good.
No problems at all.
It's going to be good.
No, it's going to be good.
We've gone through so many experiences with like, I don't know. We've gone through enough tour experiences now that we kind of know how to act and how to work on
well,
it.
Well, you know how you're going to get along. And you, yeah.
So yeah.
You know who, like, when you need space and like how to give that and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what to do when you're on the road. Like, if you need to eat, don't. Like, you just need to eat. Just spend the money and go in debt. You need to eat.
Shout out to Subway. Shout out to Tim Hortons being the main stops for vans across Canada.
I'm going to personally have, like, $300 on my credit card just from Subway.
Yeah.
Yeah, shout out to the Italian sausage, Parmigiana, being the cheapest, being one of the cheapest footlongs, yeah.
Falafel, man.
Yeah, that was
that
too.
Falafel as well. I mean,
that was now sponsored by Subway.
Honestly, if any food or drink like wants to sponsor us for dinner,
that's not very punk rock.
We're not punk rock.
Don't play punk rock. That's the only reason why we don't play it.
Money, damn it!
That's not, that's why I was in your post punk. You're past that.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, obviously space and making sure you have enough Subway. What do you guys do to kind of maintain band morale on the road? Because, you know, you're kind of in close quarters. And
well, yeah, our vehicle isn't that big. Last big tour, we toured in her...
we literally toured in my, like, grandma car. Like, yeah. It was like Christmas service. It was awful. But, like, I think leather. We found that, yeah, leather seats, you know, it's hot, and so you're stuck to the seats, and then you get a towel, so you're not as stuck to the seats, but you're still, anyways, so.
The only good thing about it is that if you're in the back seat, since you're, like, literally, like, right next to, like, a suitcase, it's like, you know, you can just, like, you know, sort of nap on it. It's kind of great.
Well, we actually found that, like, podcasts were really nice, because we could kind of just sit and, like, chill, and, like, especially, like, comedy ones would really lighten up things, so that was really helpful. We listened to a lot of Comedy Bang Bang last tour.
We could probably do some audiobooks this tour.
Yeah, we can do audiobooks this time.
And some interview stuff. Like, I'm listening to a lot of stuff now, and like, being able to, like, I guess, experience that sort of art form, you're able to bring yourself out of the driving, bring yourself out of conflict. But even that, like, we've learned how to handle conflict with each other way better than ever before. So when we know we need space, we just, like, someone doesn't need, like, to communicate. They just, you know, they need some time. Because you're in a car for, in Canada, you're in a car for, like, 11 hours sometimes.
Yeah.
For 3 days in a row. So, you know, anyone will get sick of, you know, the weather and not eating properly and not sleeping properly. All these things just, like, super react with your body. And even if you don't want to get upset, you get upset. And then you're like, how do I get out of that? And last tour, we had, like, a couple situations where we were feeling, like, nauseous or whatever. And we just needed to, like, support each other and say, like, okay, well, you know, you have to eat. Like, just eat. Because you're going to feel way worse. And it's, like, convincing each other, you know, building each other up, in other words. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing, I think, that, like, we've learned from touring enough.
Well, it's just communicating and being really straightforward with communication, right? Because, yeah. You can't, like, beat around the bush, you can't be resentful, you can't hold on to anything, because, like, everyone's going to feel like shit, right, if one person's just sitting there fuming about something. So,
Also to bring up morale, shout out to Like You Want To by Actors. It was our anthem of the last tour, and I'm sure that their new single, which they will play at our show on August 4th at the Biltmore.
Like You Want To.
Like I want to. I'm sure that it'll be the jam for the next tour, definitely, yeah.
Can fans expect more vlog installments while you're on tour?
I wouldn't say, well, maybe during. I don't know what it's going to look like, but definitely after. Yeah,
we're probably going to have some live stuff on tour. I personally am a strong advocate of keeping everything updated, like every single day having maybe one or two posts. And like, we're cracking down more on that, trying to make the most out of the trip. But we'll probably do some live stuff, live streams, and then all the vlogs usually come afterwards.
Yeah. Although we do post blogs on our website. Yeah.
Yeah, we post blogs of every day on our site, dousband.com, and we try to, like, just keep people updated. Like, oh, this is what Winnipeg has been for us, and what it's like to be here, and our show last night, and just the kind of a personable thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, even if we get just like two people reading it, people, I think, I mean, I personally appreciate that when artists are that personable. So.
Yeah, well, we've also noticed, like, the more, you know, like, especially after our last tour, we had a huge boost on our Instagram, because, like, when you're posting so much content every day and, like, you know, proving you're doing stuff, people are so much more engaged, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's a lot of work, but, you know, it actually really, it really does pay off, so, and it was nice to see that, you know, it's not just, like, you're sending it into a void, right, so.
Yeah, people are really interested when it's, like, check out Sault Ste. Marie. Well, yeah. It's the same Ram. I'm really excited to play there.
You're a great city, boy.
Great city, yeah.
Yeah, well, and you touched on something that I think not every band, especially younger bands, don't seem to get sometimes, is the importance of social media. Because, you know, for some people it can be a drag, some people it doesn't come naturally. But for you guys, do you find that it's a really useful tool in terms of engaging with your fan base and at least attempting to grow it as well?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, it's kind of like a... It's like a necessary evil, right? It's like you don't want to be like on your phone constantly, especially when you're out having experiences, but you also like want to connect with people, and like it's such a great way to connect with people, and like, you know, so it's kind of tough, you know. I don't think any of us really like intuitively are always like, I don't want to take a photo right now or post or whatever. And so like Jared has really been the one to spearhead that, and he's really our social media person who really manages everything, but we're trying to split it up more so that everyone kind of has a turn to do that. But yeah, it is like, yeah, I mean, our Instagram is like really grown, and you know, people engage as soon as you're out doing stuff, you know, so it's really great. But yeah, it is work. It is still work. So.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, because you're trying to figure out like basically exactly what people are going to engage with in the picture and in the caption, and how, if they're going to read the caption, how are you going to make it so that it's something that they're going to respond to? Like, is it like you want them to come to a show, make sure it's quick and to the point or whatever, and then the picture is interesting. So With the tours, I try to, well, we're trying to basically like prep everything before. So like the day of, we have all the tags in a list, and then we can just like tag every band, because I think tagging is super important to support other people's social media, because they're trying and they're not touring right now. So it's all about like really crediting people on tour with your social media and making sure the content is compelling enough for people to be engaged.
But sharing, really, yeah, like sharing the interaction with like other bands by tagging them, or like just even the like that like posting, you know, you're sharing what you're doing with you know, like with the viewer, you know, like who's seeing it. So it's a very, I don't know, I like that the internet is kind of communist like that. Yeah.
Well, it can
everything's shared like that.
It can turn into something even better than press half the time, right?
Yeah.
People see that someone else is interested. They retweet whatever your tweet is, and then they're like, oh, what's that? What's that band?
Yeah, it's like DIY press, like really, yeah. Like basic form of it. Yeah.
So kind of, you know, touching on social media and all that stuff, you guys obviously have a very active YouTube channel, and I noticed that you have two live videos on there. Any plans to make a formal music video for any of the songs off of your first record?
Soon.
Yeah, well, we actually have one that should be coming out before the tour, so yeah, we filmed it a few weeks ago, so yeah, there is one coming out.
Nice. See,
yeah, gotta check in on that, actually.
Yeah, we gotta check on that, because it's coming soon.
Yeah, but that was one of our goals this year, is to have one out, and there will be another one in the works eventually, but I'm waiting on a grant for that, so yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, considering it's our first music video, I know it's definitely gonna be an important one.
Oh, God.
You know, those faces don't translate over a podcast.
Given some looks over here.
Yeah, it was definitely like a big step to do that, and a lot of funding. We've put a lot of money into this record and cycle, and we're happy like that's paid off, definitely. But it's doing a music video is something I would have never imagined to do when I was younger, and then suddenly we're doing it, and you realize everything that goes into it and the people that we worked with. And I can't pronounce, I want to pronounce
her name. Nakasone folk.
That's right. They were incredibly professional. And I find that when you're collaborating, in a city like this, where everyone wants to basically be in the art scene and like contribute and write and create, it's hard to find people it's sometimes hard to find people that are that focused and professional in the whole grand scheme of filming. Like, they knew exactly what to do, exactly what lenses and the lighting down to a T.
Well, they weren't wishy-washy either, because often, you know, you would try and collaborate with other people and they would be like, oh, like, you know, well, what do you want to do? And we're like, well, this is your specialty. Like, you should have some idea, right, first of, like, what you're capable of, you know?
Yeah.
So we were running into that so much, and we just felt like, well, do we have to, like, literally, like, tell them to do their, like, how to do their job? So.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this was really, like, a refreshing experience for us. Like, they were so easy to work with, so.
Yeah, it was definitely great to work with each other.
But
yeah, I'm hinting at what I mean.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's just nerve-wracking collaborating and then putting your art in someone else's hands, really. And then, like, you basically have to make the decision when you see the product, is this going to, are we going to release this?
That yeah, like, is it going to benefit us? Like, both parties, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Which, so, like, we have, you know, with everything that we collaborate with people on, we have, like, usually have, like, some sort of confusion, and then it's easily resolved, and we had, I guess, a little bit of confusion with this video, but it was so easily resolved. And when it was resolved, it was like, wow, this is exactly what we needed. And it's perfect. And they did it perfectly. And it was so nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Feel really grateful for that.
Yes, that's coming up soon. Mm-hmm. We don't know when. We'll have a date.
It's going to be, I'm going to say it's going to be very, very, very soon.
Very, very, very soon.
Yeah, within the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Very, very soon.
It's going to be very, very crunch.
One thing I noticed in the previous touring vlogs that you did that I thought was really cool was, and they were really short snippets, but the fact that you had little snippets about different bands that you were playing with.
Yeah.
Or it was just enough where, oh, hey, that band sounds interesting. I should check them out. Kind of tying into, you know, what you guys are doing, because obviously you're based out of New Westminster and played with all sorts of bands in Vancouver. Who have you... any local bands that you found that you've really enjoyed playing with to kind of compliment you guys on a bill or vice versa? Anyone that you would think would make for a good guest on the show?
Here or on tour?
Both.
Ooh, I think we all have different answers to that as well. That's a big one.
Yeah.
I want to say on tour, there are obviously so many to me. One band I was really compelled to check out on this coming tour is called Luge. They had to drop off the bill, unfortunately, for one of our shows. But I found them super interesting. Kind of Mikachu in the Shapes, a little bit of like sort of Palm. It's really weird. Like,
wait, are we talking local bands? Or are we talking about like anywhere?
Tour and local here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so one tour, one local.
Yeah, so okay, I know that was criteria. That was one that really stuck out to me right now is Luge. I mean, they're from Toronto. They're not even that like big yet, but they have. I guess on social media they're not big, but
they have really interesting sound though.
They have an incredible sound.
Yeah,
incredible band. Local, you want to go?
I mean, local. There's bands that we've played before. And, we're playing with them again on August 4th at the Biltmore. We're playing with Actors. They're my favorite local band, without a doubt, definitely. But a band we haven't played with that I really want to. Not even a band, he's a solo artist. Goes by Devours. He put out an album, Late Bloomer, which is just, like, it's incredible, you know? Like, it's a sort of, like, electronic, like, dancey pop kind of album, but there's so much, like, interesting samples used in it that it's just, and like the hooks are so good and like the lyrics are so like relatable. it's a fantastic album. I mean, Devours, yeah, it's definitely like he's gonna be big.
He played at Catalano and I was planning on seeing a set. I just didn't get around to doing
I missed it too. We were doing another interview and it was just like, oh man, I love this interview. I'm so grateful we can do this, but I also want to see Devours. So
he's a great live set too. It's totally different from what he does in
America. Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, like another solo, like Leathers, that's Shannon Hammett from Actors. She has her own project as well. It's kind of like gothy shoegazy type. And that's really as well. She has a couple songs out right now. I think that she's gonna, you know, release a few more and start doing shows. And you know, that one's gonna be really good, definitely.
Cool. I'll check that out. Yeah, because I've interviewed, names escaping me right now, but the main guy behind Actors,
Jason.
Yes. I've interviewed him before, but yeah, I know his thing is he writes all the music, but it's cool to hear that people that he's been working with are doing their own stuff as well.
Well, they've gotten so, like, so tight and, like, such, like, a unit now, like, in that band that, like, really, like, all of them, I feel like, must be contributing something because you can hear so many of their, like, own kind of styles in there, you know? So, I mean, yeah, so that kind of whole Jackknife sound slash, I guess, the darker end of the Fox Cabaret kind of scene, you know, I feel like that there's like, and like Rickshaw as well, you know, like some of those bands are just like, there's some of the most interesting local music I find. It's really nice to see as well, like how I don't know if it's like sort of like how long it's been going, but it's just like, I'm just finding so many more cool local bands now. It's just like, man, this is crazy. Like it almost makes me proud to be semi-Vancouver.
I thought you were coming in with a pun. I was like, nope, I'm gonna stop you now. We played with Walgren a while ago, and they are so, so tight. Like, they are just so good. Like, it's Tegan Walgren's project, and they play violin and they loop, and they loop their voice and their violin, and it's just, like, incredible.
That's awesome.
So tight. Like, it's, yeah, they played with us at Fox Cabaret is doing a 4x4 thing, so it's like $4 a cover, 4 bands, $4 drinks. So we did the first one, and yeah, it's really a good deal. But yeah, Adam Fink organizes that, and so he asked me, like, who would you want to play with? And I was like, Walgren, and then luckily they could do it. But yeah, it was, yeah, they're incredible.
And it's great because, like, Adam Fink, he plays drums in Actors, and we're playing with Actors on our record. Oh my gosh. At the Biltmore.
Actors has had like way more than enough promo. Like, we're gonna send us to Jason, like, this is just the big Actors ad. The Actors ad for you, Jason.
Wear their shirt a lot, it's really comfy.
You don't talk about Actors anymore.
Following up a broad question with another broad question, what would you say makes Vancouver unique as a city for local music, and what has your experience been like as a band?
I mean, I think the toughest thing is that there's so many bands and so few venues, right? And so I think what's been interesting is, like, seeing the DIY scene, like, you know, kind of flourish in the face of, like, you know, all this gentrification and, like, all these venues being shut down and stuff. I think that's really, like, the most, like, empowering thing in some ways. And, like, Maddie Cormer, she's in charge of Trashity Productions, and she's, you know, like, she, like, cultivated the whole all-ages scene. And I mean, like, at first I know she, like, didn't really know, like, what was going on and, like, all the consequences of, like, building a following so fast, but I think she's really, like, taken charge of that, and that's very cool to see, you know? That's, like, really, like, empowering, I think, so.
Yeah, and seeing her, like, even, like, get contacted by MRG to, like, help them put on all-ages shows at, like, the Biltmore Ballroom, for instance, you know? She'll get, they used to go under Andrew Jackson Jihad, now AJJ, like, you know, she's booking them. I think she booked the Elvis and Presley show.
Yeah,
she did. Yeah, but she's like a powerhouse, you know, in the music scene now.
She's 18 and, like, booking these, like, big bands. She's 18.
She's 18. But yeah, she's, like, super accomplished already.
Yeah, it is really cool to see, you know, like, you know, kind of going off what you said. Yeah, just, like, all these, you know, faced with the horrors of gentrification, seeing, you know, the DIY sort of scene, whether it's, you know, punk bands or, you know, indie bands or folk artists, or even, like, you know, weird avant-garde experimental stuff, you know, like, seeing how they come up and, you know, like, really sort of create a, you know, it, like, maybe small at times, but a strong following nonetheless, you know, it's like, it is really inspiring to see, you know, like, people that are at, you know, sort of similar level that you're at doing it, you know, they just, like, they play shows and, you know, they get a following by just doing it completely themselves. So, you know, or with friends, you know, DIY.
Definitely. Yeah. So what do you guys have planned for the rest of 2017? I mean, obviously, you have the tour, but what else is going on? Are you guys planning on recording and releasing any new music this year, or?
No, we'll be, so we'll be doing the month-long tour, and then, like, 4 days after we get back, Jer and I are going to Europe for a month, and then once we get back, kind of, like, it's, like, a treat for, like, hustling all year. Yeah, so that'll be nice, but basically, once we get back and, like, have it, like, you know, have, like, cleared our heads, we'll, like, be writing again, probably, in the winter, and we don't have, like, strong plans, but we're hoping to do more touring in 2018, too, so, and, like, writing alongside that, so.
We just have a lot of sketches right now. Patrick's brought a lot of sketches over the year and a half, I guess, almost. Yeah. Like, it's And Leah's also brought a lot of sketches. That's and right. Well,
no, Patrick's definitely brought like significantly more.
He writes very quick, so it's great, and it's great to have so many ideas flowing. And I think it's really cool the direction that it's sounding, the direction it seems to be going in. We started kind of looking at a new song last week a little more, and there's some parts that are in it now, and they're kind of really, it's really feeling like we know what style we're trying to go for now, I think. And it's really cool to explore creating again, because we haven't really written anything since the album. And so kind of just approaching creating again has been really fast.
Yeah, there's just been like back-end work since January, really. So we haven't really been like sitting down and being like, well, yeah, we're musicians. We don't just book tours and like send out press releases. So
our day jobs. Yes.
And like our day jobs like, also.
Almost full-time, all of us. So.
Yeah.
And like obviously, you know, this isn't a promise, but hopefully it'll be ready for our show on August 4th. At the Biltmore.
New music. That's exciting.
That is not a promise.
I said I can't promise it.
No, that's right. Yeah.
I'm interested in playing parts of it.
Guys, why? You're as cool as the open mic. You want to hear a cool song we're starting?
I'm playing the whole thing.
I got a riff. Yeah.
Are you actually?
With just my part, maybe. That's.
Which what?
Just kind of start. We'll talk about it later.
We'll talk about this later. Okay.
Yeah, I just started downloading it. It sounds pretty rad. Kind of like all kinds of stuff.
Because I wrote it. Hey.
Yeah. But yeah, so, hopefully, I mean, you know, like while they're gone, I'm sure I'm going to be like working on more, like new ideas and, hopefully getting shows happening for like, you know, like one or two other projects of mine, you know, while there's like that sort of short break. But yeah, I think kind of just winter, I feel like, is like one of the best times for bands to be writing. The weather gets cold, so it kind of, you know, sort of influences the music in a cold way.
Right.
You can't have fun anymore because the sun's not out.
Get all emotional.
Yeah,
exactly. Staying inside.
Yeah. It's not festival season anymore.
That's when all bands turn into emo bands.
Yes.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Already almost an emo band. Yeah.
Awesome, guys. Well, thanks so much for coming on. This has been honestly great. We weren't expecting all this, so it's fantastic. So thank you so much.
Finally, we're going to play Speak to Carry Us, the lead single from the record. If you enjoyed listening to Douse as much as we do, you can catch them at their tour kickoff show, Friday, August 4th at the Biltmore Cabaret. Thanks for listening. Dowse's debut record, The Light in You Is Left, is available on Bandcamp, YouTube, iTunes, and Spotify. You can follow Dowse on Facebook and on Instagram at DowseBand.
Dowse are going to be on a cross-Canada tour promoting their new record starting August 4th until September 16th. They'll be playing dates in Vancouver, Calgary, Ottawa, and Montreal, along with many other dates in between. Special thanks to Unbiased Media Productions and Travis Dean for hosting us at his studio. We could not have done this without him.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you can follow us at Pacific Sound Radio on Facebook and on Instagram at Pacific Sound Radio. For new episodes and additional content, Pacific Sound Radio is available on YouTube and on our website at pacificsoundradio.com. I'm James Olson.
And I'm Jaden Fraze.
See you next time.